We're into lesson number 3 today, and we're going to be talking about blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. And that comes out of Matthew chapter 5 and verse 5. In the Sermon on the Mount, what Jesus did was that he cut away all the religious existentialism. He wants to get rid of all of that stuff. Jesus was not interested, as it appears, with the externals of things as he was with the internal. I can be wounded external and get away, but if it wounds me inside, internal, I'm in trouble. And that's the way this is working. Jesus would tell you that the externals have to come as an outgrowth of properly tuned heart and not as a show of pity. The Beatitudes were powerful, powerful texts that had much to say to change the world. The externals have to come through the outgrowth of a properly tuned heart. What I'm glad that God does not do is that he does not give us a list of do and don't. I hate do and don't lists, don't you? So he carefully holds us in his embrace so we can ponder his ways and his thoughts and his agendas. What would you think if God just decided today for every one of us here to give us his thoughts and his ways and all of that? Would you be a different person? That's exactly what God's doing with the Beatitudes. They're not cute little sayings. In our previous studies, we have looked at blessed are the poor in spirit. That's where we were last time. Remember that the linking together of these Beatitudes is like a string of fine pearls. It's very valuable. What we need to know is that blessed are the meek, they'll inherit the earth, but meekness needs to be looked at as what it's not. It's not being timid. Jesus Christ, if he was anything, he wasn't timid about a thing. He would tell you right then what he wanted to say, and he didn't have any qualms about it. Jesus was bold. He spoke with authority. I do this sometimes. Need to say something like, can you go out in the yard and spruce up some stuff? I'll say, well, I can do a little of this over here and a little of this over here. She says, no, I want it done. That's kind of how God wants it, isn't it? He don't want to mess with it and play with it. It's not being timid. And the apostles were bold, and they spoke with authority, and they were not weak. There are people who are spineless. You know what spineless is? They don't have the fortitude to stand up for what they believe or what they think. This beatitude is not niceness. It's not a spirit of compromise. Meekness is best defined by the Greek word parotes, which means gentleness of strength. Basically, meekness is power under control. Over time, I suppose that everybody in here has watched people who get a little power. A little power is a dangerous thing. But what meekness is power brought under control. In that bringing under control by humility, not strength. It's controlled even more powerfully as a mourning spirit. Do you mourn for this nation and some of the stuff that's going around in it? do you mourn in things of importance? This is what this beatitude does. It helps us have power brought under the control. For instance, it's like taming a wild horse. How many of you in here have ever had a horse? I've had horses. I've ridden bulls. I've done a lot of stupid things because everything I put God on stomped on me. But when you want to talk about meekness, it's power under God's control. It's a controlled by a mourning spirit. It's like taming a wild horse, which is simply having a horse's power under your control. When you first get a horse that you're not used to, you chase that thing all over 40 acres. They'll run around and do all kind of things, but there will come a time if you give that animal the attention and the training they need, they could walk beside you, no bridle, saddle, or anything, and they would do that. That's what it's like when you talk about meekness. It removes the have-to spirit. Oh, do I have to go do that again? Takes that away. It rejoices in the will of God. All of this is what we need. In Psalm 119, 97 to 104, listen to these words. Oh, how I love your law. I meditate on it all day long. Your commands are always with me and make me wiser than my enemies. I have more insight than my teachers, for I meditate on your statutes. I have more understanding than the elders, for I obey your principles and statutes. I have more understanding than the elders, for I obey their precepts. I keep my feet from every evil path, so I might obey your word. I have not departed from your laws, for you yourself have taught me. How sweet are your words to my taste, sweeter than the honey to my mouth. I gain understanding from your precepts, therefore I hate every wrong path. What would happen to the United States of America if just that part of that psalm was ingrained in the heart of everybody in this country? Would you have killings every night? People being shot up, hurt, drugged? When God speaks, we don't get put out. It reflects in us a teachable moment. In the book of James, chapter 1, verse 19 to 21, my dear brothers and sisters, take note of this. Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, slow to become angry, because human anger does not produce righteousness that God desires. Therefore, get rid of all moral filth and evil that is so prevalent, and humbly accept the word planted in you, which can save you. These Beatitudes, if you just read the Beatitudes, it's just a little string of lines. But when you blow it up and look at it and play with it under all of what it is, this thing is huge. Matthew chapter 11, 28 to 30. Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I'll give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I'm gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. The Beatitudes are not some little cute sayings. They are just little snippets that get fulfilled from the Scripture. If you want to kind of define it, meekness is strength and firmness for what is right, bordered on every side. How would you like to live in a world where you had all this kind of stuff right here in our own place, and everybody was joining in and saying, yes, this is what we want? This is the kind of life we want. Titus 3, verse 1 and 2. Remind the people to be subject to the rulers and authorities, to be obedient and be ready to do whatever is good, to slander no one, to be peaceful and considerate, and always to be gentle toward everyone. Ephesians 4, verses 2 and 3, be completely humble and gentle. Be patient. I don't know about you, but when I want something, I want it right now. But that's the way life is. Be gentle, be patient, bearing with one another in love. Make every effort to keep the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. What would the world be like if we listened to God? If we heard what He had to say and put it into practice? This is the man or woman who is angry and sins not. He or she is angry at the right time, at the right place, and about the right things. Isn't it true? Whenever we get angry, we go do a lot of stuff that didn't even need to be in the picture. Jesus is our example of that. In John chapter 2, 13 to 17, when it was almost the time for the Passover, Jesus went up to Jerusalem. In the temple courts, He found people selling cattle, sheep, doves, and others sitting at the table exchanging money. Now, is there any problem with people having cattle, sheep, doves? Well, when you're in the presence of royalty, like Jesus would have been, and you're doing this in the honor of God, this is all wrong. But what He did in verse 15, He made a whip of cords and He drove all of the people from the temple courts, sheep, cattle, and all of that, and He scattered their coins. I'm getting the idea that Jesus is not happy with this. He turned the money changers over in their tables. To those who sold doves, He said, get these out of here. Stop turning My Father's house into a market. His disciples remembered that it was written, zeal for your house will consume Me. God doesn't want His church filled up with a bunch of junk either. Sadly, it's happening in a lot of places, way more than we want to. In Mark 11, 12 to 17, I want you to note that this was thought out before it was carried out. The next day, as they were leaving Bethany, Jesus was hungry. Seeing in the distance a fig tree in leaf, He went to find out if it had any fruit. When He reached it, He found nothing but leaves, because it was not the season for figs. And then He said to the tree, may no one ever eat of this fruit from you again. And His disciples heard Him say it. On reaching Jerusalem, Jesus entered the temple courts, began driving out those who were buying and selling there. Let me tell you something. The marketplace in that day and time, it was all Pete and Sam. That means you were walking everywhere you went. When Jesus drives these people out of the temple court, Jesus was not a sissy. He was not a weakling. Now, what Jesus could have done with one word is evaporated everybody in the whole place, but He didn't. But He did turn over the money changers and their benches to those selling doves and wouldn't allow anyone to carry merchandise through the temple courts. And He taught them and said, is it not written, My house will be a house called a house of prayer for all nations, but you have made it a den of robbers. Examples are all over this place with meekness. Abraham allowed Lot, the younger man, to assert himself and take first choice of the land without murmuring and without complaining. Moses, ready every moment to humble and abase himself before God, and didn't feel put out by God's will, though he did feel inadequate. David, he knew that he was to be king and had been informed and anointed, yet he suffered Saul's injustice and unkind treatment. Stephen suffered death at the hands of unconcerned wicked Jews, yet he died with their best interest in mind. Could you do that? Could you take people that's beaten you to half to death and bless them? Paul suffered not only persecutions of the Jews, but mostly, get this, he had outside persecutions, but his biggest war was his brethren, people of his own kind. Do you think that still goes on today? That's why you hear words like, "For they shall inherit the earth." Psalm 37, 10 to 13. A little while, and the wicked will be no more. Though you look for them, they will not be found. But the meek will inherit the land and enjoy peace and prosperity. The wicked plot against the righteous and gnash their teeth at them. But the Lord laughs at the wicked, for he knows their day is coming. If I heard that statement right there, "Your day is coming," from my mama and daddy, if I heard that once, I heard it 1,000 times. And when that happened, you straightened up and took a right path, or die. Psalm 22, my God, why have you forsaken me? Why are you so far from saving me, far from the cries of my anguish? My God, I cry out by day, but you do not answer; by night, but I do not find rest. You are enthroned as the Holy One. You are the one Israel praises. In you your ancestors put their trust. They trusted and you delivered them. To you they cried out and were saved. In you they trusted and were not put to shame. But I am a worm and not a man, scorned by everyone, despised by the people. All who see me mock me. They hurl insults, shaking their heads. He trusts in the Lord, they say. Let him rescue him. Let him deliver him, since he delights in him. Yet you brought me out of the womb. You made me trust in you even at my mother's breast. From birth I was cast on you. From my mother's womb you have been my God. Do not be far from me, for trouble is near and there is no one to help. Many bulls surround me. Strong bulls of Bashan encircle me. Roaring lions that tear their prey, opening their mouths wide against me. I'm poured out like water. All my bones are out of joint. My heart is turned to wax and is melted within me. My mouth is dried up like a potsherd, and my tongue sticks to the roof of my mouth, and you lay me in the dust of the earth. That doesn't sound like fun. Do you realize that Jesus Christ took on every evil thing, brought it to himself, purified it with his people, so that you and I could stand in the presence of Jehovah God in full understanding that God is on our side. You cannot beat that deal. You couldn't have enough money to buy that. You probably couldn't have enough resources of anything to have that. But you know what God does with all this? when he's given us this greatness, he takes it from himself and puts it into us. And I can stand again. I have a God who will stand up for me. He will allow me to go through difficult times. He will allow me to have fun sometimes. And he'll have me crying other times. But it's not because God's bad. It's because God is working with us so that all that's evil out there can be under control and we can live in peace. I would like to tell you that I know everything in this book right here, but I don't. I have read it countless times. I still don't get it right. But what God does to me and for me, he takes my flaws and absorbs them for himself and gives me what I need. I'm not worthy of that. And as much as I love every one of you in here, you're not worthy of that either. But we have a God who makes us worthy. When you have that, you cannot beat that. Let's sing a song.